A gigantic franchise blockbuster film centering around a young man who becomes a savior.
Featuring a desert planet, sword fights, and magical space powers. This week, we're not talking about Star Wars. We're talking about Dune Part 2.
How Star Wars is it?
Well, hello there, Mike.
Hi, Josiah and listeners.
Or should we say, hi! And then some like, yeah. Welcome to How Star Wars Is It? This is the only podcast. I can say that this week because we do have a guest, but as far as I know, he does not have his own podcast. So we are the only podcast this week.
That's right.
And what do we do here? What do we do here, Mike?
Well, we review things. We take a topic every week. That could be a movie. It could be a food. It could be a concept. And we don't give it just a regular rating. We rate it on a scale of 1 to 10 of how Star Wars it is. So
that's right.
Generally speaking, Star Wars films get higher scores than pie, candy, dogs.
Yeah.
And this week we are talking about a, I'm not gonna show my cards entirely, but a pretty Star Warsy thing.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we don't pick these topics. Like
no,
we said
they
before,
come out of our bingo ball cage.
We have a bingo ball cage, and it's an infinite bingo ball cage with infinite topics.
Yeah.
And that's how we pick our topics. And luckily this week, we got Dune Part 2, which only came out a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that was really lucky.
So like, it's pretty lucky. And it's only, and this is going to come out in like 2 weeks. Yeah. So it's going to be like a month late, but that's still pretty timely.
Yeah, that's timely for us.
As for us, and especially considering we picked it with an infinite bingo ball game.
Right.
But we are discussing Dune Part 2 this
next
week.
Next week, it's like Whiteout. Or like Stapler.
Stapler. Anything you can find on a desk.
Yeah.
But this week we have a good friend of mine, old friend of mine, joining us on the show. And I would say a little bit of a Dune, maybe not an expert, but a fanatic, a fan, as it were. So welcome to the show, Dune books and movie fan, and an old friend of mine from back in the improv days of early IO, and at least early IO in our lives, Eric Parmer.
Woo, 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 woo. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Eric basically was like, you gotta see Dune Part 2. When are you seeing Dune Part 2? And I was like, I was a whole week late, but I finally saw it. And we were talking about the movie, and I was like, Eric, do you just want to be on the podcast and we talk about it? Because I think that would make the most sense.
Definitely. Yeah, there was no patience for me when it came to finding out if you watched the thing that I watched. As we do a lot, I feel like I'm always getting on your case, being like, Josie, watch this, watch that.
Yeah.
To the point where, I don't know if you remember this, we during, I think, like, peak pandemic, I pretty much made you watch Dune 1984 with me, to the point where I like Venmo'd you the money so you could rent it on like whatever streaming service.
$2.99 or whatever.
But I do remember watching it together, and like, but we live watched it together.
Yeah.
I think we just pushed play at the same time, and we were just like texting each other the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And did one of you have like the right headphone and the other have the left?
Yeah. We were sitting next to each other holding hands.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was my first time ever holding hands with someone, and I was very nervous.
Yeah, me too. It was really sweaty. I'm so sorry. I got sweat on your hand.
It's all right. Mine were so clammy too. It's okay.
I have not seen the 1984 one, but I also have not read the books, and I'm starting to think that perhaps I need to.
Yeah, girl. Dude, they're good.
At least the first few, I hear maybe it's like one good one, a second okay one, and then like 50 not so good ones.
That's pretty
accurate. Vary that. Yeah. I mean, so my experience with Dune was first back at IO.
Really?
One of our friends, Otto, was obsessed with the book Dune. And he was just trying to get everybody to read it. And so he bought me a copy. And I think I got like 80 pages in, and I was like, what the hell is this Quasarch Heterac? I don't have time for this glossary. Uh-huh. And then, yes, being a big David Lynch fan, I watched the Dune movie, which was not a great adaptation of it. It was very talky. It was very camp, very like low budget special effects. And I still had no idea what was going on in it. But when the 2021 adaptation came out, part one, I just sat there and like my eyes were like wide as plates as like, you know, the ship rises out of the ocean to fly to Arrakis. And I was like, who gave them permission to go like this fucking hard? And why did it take a movie with almost no dialogue to get me to completely understand the story?
Yeah.
I know, right?
Yeah, that first one, I think both of them kind of have this, but the first one especially, it's just sort of like 2.5 hours of vibe.
Yeah. They're just kind of like presenting you with images and landscapes, and they're like, what do you think about this?
And you can't help but be just like fully magnetized, like drawn all the way in, like even just Dune Part Two I saw a couple weeks ago and left the theater like, that was good. Like I don't know that I could point my finger at anything that like I loved or didn't like, and then the next day I woke up and I was like, why am I not still in Dune? Like I want to go back there.
Yeah.
I wish my life was just watching Dune.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
This is good. I like our Dune journeys. If I remember correctly, when we recorded an episode on Dune Part One, at least I read the description of it the other day, and it's basically me being like, here's an hour of me yelling at Mike about Dune terms. And it's just me being like, Kwisatz Haderach!
Yeah.
Muad'Dib!
Yeah.
And like, it's just, that's the whole episode is me just like yelling at Mike about Dune lore.
Yeah.
Which I'm not even that like good at. But I don't have that in-depth of knowledge of, but I got into Dune in like college because a good friend of mine in a summer stock show is in. He was obsessed with it too, and he was like, "It's my favorite book. It's like the best sci-fi book I've ever read." And I was like, "What's all this about?" Because I never even heard of it, right? And I read it, and I was like, "Dang, that's a really good book." Because it is a really good book. It's really well written. It's like, it's super in depth. It does that thing. I know there's a term for this, I can't remember what it is, but where it's got like little like quotes from like in-universe sources that like at the beginning of each chapter, like it's like from the Orange Bible, page 75, section 3 or whatever. And then like it has a little quote that it kind of gives you context sometimes for the chapter, but like most of the time it's not like like explicitly related to what's going on.
It's like the pirate comics the kid reads in Watchmen.
yeah, exactly. So it's just kind of like giving you a little vibe of like, here's the world. Here's some more of the world going on.
Yeah.
And like, Dune Part 1, great world building. Dune Part 2, great world building.
Yeah.
Like the book itself is some of the best world building, and like to that extent, like Dune Messiah, and then like lesser, you know, returns at the further you get away from the original book. And then like his son kept writing Dune books after him, which are essentially, I saw them like described as like endorsed fan fiction, basically, because like no actual fan considers them canon, but like they are canon.
Yeah.
Like,
can you imagine going into the family business like if your dad ran a hardware store in the 60s and you started working at it after, but it's like the most specific thing.
Yeah, if it's the best sci-fi book ever written, and you have to be like, you have to keep doing this.
Yeah,
make more of these. Yeah, but so that was my Dune journey. Was I started in college? I didn't see 1984 the David Lynch 1984 until I watched it with you, Eric. So that was an experience, and it's that movie is so interesting and like kind of sad because they just like didn't get to finish it in the way they wanted to. But hey, Dune Part Two, long movie, they take their time with it. And they get a lot of stuff done in this one.
And honestly, I could have sat in that movie for like another 30 minutes to 2 hours.
Yeah, I
hours.
Could too. Aside from me needing to pee.
Oh, yeah.
If I'd had a little intermission, that'd have been great. And then I'd been like, I could have stayed for a little longer.
I have a friend who just this past weekend saw it for the third and fourth times. And I do want to go again. It's very rare that I like want to go to a movie more than once in the theater, because it's rare that I even go to a movie theater in the first place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I definitely want to go see it again.
But Eric, you saw it twice, right?
I did, yeah. So the first time I saw it in like Dolby Cinema, which they have like, you know, fancy schmancy speakers, uh-huh. the like projections, you get like richer colors. And then I saw it in IMAX on 70mm, which everyone's like, that's the thing, you gotta go see Oppenheimer in it. And I love, you know, getting the extra, like the extra imagery. I kind of thought the picture quality wasn't as good as Dolby. But
that's what I've heard.
Hot take, or I guess regular take.
But like, I mean, it is one of those films where it's like, it's loud. The imagery is just so bizarre that like, the more you can just like let it envelop your body, I think that's why it's just such a cool like cinematic experience. Like
totally.
Once Lady Jessica was like, about to get her water of life ritual, and she's like, what's going on? And like, Miss Mama, like old lady's eyes roll back into her head, and she's like, nah, like speaking in tongues. I was like, ooh, they did it again. Here we are. I'm in trance. I'm into it.
Yeah.
They've done it again.
Yeah.
Denny, my little brother, he texted me the words D-E-N-I-S, Denny, right, is how mm-hmm. it's pronounced. But then the rest of the sentence was, don't miss. And so I was like, either we are going to say this, Denis, don't miss,
uh-huh.
or Denis, don't me.
Don't me.
Don't me.
So either way, Denis, don't me, baby. Part one was good. Part two was even better, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting because like I was watching with Charlie, who I watched the first one with, but we watched it like, because it came out in like 2021, so like pandemic stuff was still pretty big, and it was kind of hard to go to the theaters. So we watched it like in her apartment, you know, on streaming, which isn't the best way to see that movie.
That's what I did too, and I immediately felt like guilty when I started talking to friends who saw it, like in the movie theater.
Right?
They're like, it was awesome, wasn't it? I was like, yeah.
Yeah, and they're like, weren't you enveloped by the sound of the colors in the picture? No, I only saw on, it was, the screen was only 4 feet wide.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, everybody. I failed cinema.
Right.
But it was interesting seeing it with Charlie, because she didn't remember a lot, and I was having a hard time. I was like, listen, I don't know if I can explain everything to you, because I've kind of forgotten a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hadn't read the book in a while, and it had been 2 years since I watched the movie. And we foolishly did not do a rewatch of part one before part two, which I wish I would have done that, because I think these movies are probably best experienced as one big unit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
Back to back.
I rewatched part one. I even told you that day. It was like 11 a.m. We had a rehearsal. And I was like, you made a Dune reference in some scene. And I was like, I watched Dune before I came here. And like the couple people standing right there were like, what? It's 11 a.m. now. And I was like, yeah, I woke up kind of early. It was like 6. And I watched all of Dune. And then my wife woke up and was like, what have you been doing? And I was like, I watched all of Dune. How long have you been awake? A whole Dune.
A whole Dune. A part one of a Dune.
Yeah.
Can you believe? That's a wild thing to start morning off.
It was a very strange morning. But it's definitely worth... I would love to set aside just like a whole day and do both. Like,
yeah.
That would be so much fun.
Oh, I was going to say, there's like a lot of really wonderful similarities between the first and second, just within like the narrative of the storytelling. Like in the first one, you have Zendaya doing the like the prologue, but you never really mm-hmm. get to learn a whole bunch about her. Film
yes.
ends with a fight. You start seeing how Zendaya like comes into play. Same with the second one. You get the what I love that they pulled from the book, the Princess Irulan, Flo Pugh, doing her
Flo
kind
Pugh.
Of like historical narration prologue. Scattered bits. You end with the fight between Paul and Fade, and you start kind of seeing how
totally
Ireland's going to come into play in the next film.
Yeah,
you have the
I didn't clock that, but that's so true.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you have like the Gom Jabbars in both scenes, where you have a Bene Gesserit like testing the bloodline to see if they're going to be potential Quasars.
Yeah, that's so cool. I hadn't thought about that.
I've watched a lot of like the interviews and press and stuff, and Villeneuve said, like, I like told Florence Pugh basically what I told Zendaya, which is like, I would really love you to do this movie. You don't have very much to do, and it is to almost guarantee that we will get another movie where you are like very central.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
which is a very good trick in a world with a lot of lore and mythos and vocabulary you kind of have to be hip to. As long as you know, like, oh, got it, that's Rebecca Ferguson, or that's Dave Bautista. Yeah. Like, it's sort of like what Nolan did with Oppenheimer. Like, it's a story about, like, the most 40-year-old white men you've ever counted in one room. So he's like, well, I'll just cast all actors you've seen before.
Yeah, that'll make it easy for you. That was Robert Downey Jr., wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also cool because the Florence Pugh stuff, like, echoes that thing I was talking about with, like, putting a little snippets of, like, lore before chapters. Because, like, it echoes that from the books of being, like, here's a little bit of, like, a written work that we are hearing read aloud, which is cool. I do want to, like, shout out, I talked about this, I think, on the last episode we recorded, and I talked about it with you, Eric, but I do want to shout out my one beef with Florence, with old Flo.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good American accent. Everyone's doing a pretty standard American accent. Well, not everyone, but some people are doing a pretty standard American accent. Flo's not bad at it, but she did say he'll become a religious figure. Mm-hmm. And I was like, a what? A figure? Did you say figure? I was like, no, Flo.
Yeah.
And then occasionally she had, like, some, her, like, R's and er's were, like, a little very much British person doing American accent where they're like, I had to try harder to say that word. And I'm like, yeah, you do. You do have to try harder. But anyways, great. Some fun voices in this movie, I gotta say. Austin Butler.
Oh, my God. Dude, he's doing the thing. We talked about this last week maybe too, but the thing that the guy who played Christopher Walken's son in Batman Returns, how he's just kind of doing Christopher Walken. He's doing the same thing, but with Stellan Skarsgård. Like, he's kind of talking like this. It's so good.
It's so good. I wish that Florence Pugh would have done that Walken. And done a Christopher Walken impression, because that's her dad.
Honestly, I would live for her doing Chris. That would be fantastic.
Can you imagine? She, like, starts the movie. Like, she starts the movie with her narration, and it's just like, here on Arrakis, we're trying to get some spice. I don't know what.
Don't know. The family of Atreides has fallen.
Has fallen. Oh, man. The really fun. We can't stop Austin Butler from doing a fun voice. No. He's going to do it every time.
He's always doing the most. Always doing the most. I do love that, like, interlude where it's kind of just Dune, Arrakis, and then they're like, hold on, 20-minute short film about Fade in his, like, with his cannibal girlfriends getting his, like, chiseled body painted black just for him to put clothes over. I was like, you can't, like, paint his abs, you know, put little patterns on them and then have him fully clothed. It was a little rude, honestly, but
it was rude. Yeah.
And then, like, the Margot Fenring scene where she just, like, seduces him with the witch powers, like, that was a scene I don't remember from the book. I don't even remember her character from the book, but hot damn, like, I was so into that scene. It was so good.
It was cool.
Yeah.
It was interesting seeing the Bene Gesserits, like, multiple tactics that they use. You know, they can come at you a couple different ways. You never know where they're going to be coming from.
Yeah.
Fade, is it Fade Rautha?
Rautha.
Rautha.
Yeah, Rautha. Rautha.
Mm-hmm. Rautha. That guy's fucking nuts, dude.
Yeah.
And he was fun. And Austin Butler was, I think, having the time of his life.
Totally.
Oh, yeah. He looked like he was having fun.
Yeah.
He's doing a Stellan Skarsgård impression. Yeah. He kissed Stellan Skarsgård on the mouth.
Yeah.
Twice.
The line of like the worst comeback in the world.
Oh, right.
Made thy knife chip and shatter.
Yes.
Is so good. Yeah. Oh, it's so funny.
He's like surprised by it. He's like, "Wait, did you just say that to me?"
That was sick. Can I I don't have a good one, so I'll just do that one too, because that one was awesome.
I'll just steal yours. I'll just steal yours. May thy knife chip and shatter. Yeah,
and also like Javier Bardem.
Oh yeah,
was in this movie and was great. Is.
Yeah, he,
that's who that is.
Like, made me laugh out loud
multiple
yes, me
times.
Too.
Yeah,
Stilgar is funny.
Yeah.
Like Stilgar's got some funny lines in this.
I don't remember him being comedic in the book, but I'm
neither,
glad
but
because
yeah.
Jason Momoa, Duncan Idaho, was kind of like our comedic relief for the first one.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And so like having somebody kind of take over that mantle. It really helped, like, the pacing and helps you connect to the film, too.
Totally.
Well, it was funny because he wasn't necessarily, like, telling jokes. He was just, like, being... He was delivering these, like, pretty straightforward things in fun ways, but it was, like, it was funny because of our audience knowledge, you know, of, like, knowing that Paul isn't slash is this, like, prophecy... Like, that he technically is the like prophesied savior, but that it's all fake made up prophecy anyway, so like it doesn't really count. But it's like we have the audience knowledge, but like Stilgar thinks he's this messiah, and like it's his like religious fervor and like certainty reads as funny sometimes. You know what I mean? Like the way he delivers these things is just, you're just like that was funny.
Yeah.
He made me laugh.
Yeah. And that's a big change from the book, like having that kind of dichotomy of some of the Fremen being completely with him and some who are like, no, that's some mumbo jumbo made up by Bene Gesserit.
Yeah.
Like that wasn't really as clear in the book from what I remember. And then
I agree. Yeah.
When Messiah came out, it was like, oh, actually some Fremen are against Paul. And having like somebody like Zendaya to kind of show that side of, some people are a bit indifferent to his like rise to being, you know, space Jesus. I think it was really smart. I thought that was a really good change.
Yeah, all the changes they made from what I remember from the book,
because
I don't remember, because like it is very hazy. Like I read it a while ago. I've done like I reread it once, but I didn't make it all the way through. And then I started reading Messiah, and then I forgot that I like to read, and so I stopped reading. Because which just happens to me sometimes. But all the changes they made were smart. And Eric, you said one the other day when we were talking about the Anya Taylor-Joy character, who is also...
Oh my God, right.
Miss
She's
Talia.
In the movie.
Blink and you miss her. Another one of like, hey, you might get to do way more in a sequel if we get to, you know, if we get to make these sequels. But Alia, the unborn baby in this movie, whereas... Is it in Dune itself?
Yeah.
Like she does get born,
she
right? And she's like a little toddler, but she's like a freak toddler.
Yeah. There's actually like a 3-year time gap. So she is born with all of that like knowledge of all of her ancestors. And it's so funny. She basically comes out being like a fully sentient murder toddler.
Yeah, she's like crazy.
The Fremen
what,
are like
Angelica Pickles from Rugrats?
Literally.
Yes.
she kills Stellan Skarsgård, Baron Harkonnen.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, she kills him. She's like considered an abomination by like all of the Bene Gesserit because like she's not supposed to have that knowledge. And she turns into a badass character, especially in Children of Dune, which I don't know how they could adapt that movie. But I think having like a talking fetus worked for me. Like,
yeah,
I think Dune 84 made it very apparent, like, a lip-dubbed toddler is strange. Having a CGI toddler would probably also be strange.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think they did that in Twilight.
Renesmee Cullen,
Renesmee. A little rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the changes they made like worked for me and they made sense.
I saw a thing today, in fact, that was saying, you know, like essentially, again, I haven't read the book, but my understanding is the character of Chani was really kind of reworked to be this like foil, someone reacting to the sort of grasping of power that Paul's character does as a resource for us watching to start learning like, oh no, he's not Luke Skywalker, he's not Harry Potter. He's not to just be like accepted and trusted at face value.
Right.
And that so many people are like still being like, yeah, our hero guy that that he's, you know, basically saying like, okay, well, like I have to make Dune Messiah now to like tell people like no, and that is essentially exactly what happened to Frank Herbert.
Yes.
That like he finished writing Dune and people were like, Paul, and he's like, God damn it.
Yeah. I sent you like, I think I sent both of you this like TikTok meme that was like cover of Dune, it was like Paul sucks or whatever, and then like cover of Dune Messiah. Okay, I guess I have to tell you again.
Listen,
like,
guys.
can I have to reiterate this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, and then Charlie like leaned over towards me in the movie and she was like, is this just a white savior narrative? And I was like, it's a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the thing that people are missing. Because it is like, guys, I've seen a lot of takes on TikTok about this and on Instagram. Like, media literacy is dead.
Yeah.
In general, right. No one knows how to literate a media anymore. And it's true with Dune, because the people are like, Chani is literally like, my little brother was like, Chani literally looks at the camera, like dead in the camera, and is like, you shouldn't trust a messiah-like figure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, essentially, like, you know, not actually saying that, but like through the course of the movie, you are told through her perspective that like this is dangerous, mm-hmm. and this is not a good thing. And then there are still people who watch this movie that are like, fuck yeah, go Paul. And
it's like, right.
I don't know, guys. He's starting a holy war and like billions of people are going to die. I don't think it's a good thing what's happening.
It's like how Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar, and presumably in the Bible, will say, whenever anyone says like, you're the son of God or whatever, and his answer is always like, this is what you're saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those are your words.
Yeah, I didn't say it.
Yeah.
You said it.
He say that in the Bible?
Oh, he did, actually, okay. Yes. Yeah. He did say stuff
so
like that.
So Weber and those guys were onto something when they were adapting it.
No, they actually retconned the Bible to fit Jesus Christ Superstar, yeah.
Sort of like how what... Because that's something... Wait, you just told me this, Josiah, that there's some kind of character or being from Lynch's Dune...
Oh, yes.
...that then Frank Herbert was like, that is what they look like.
The Guild Navigators.
The Guild Navigators.
Did you like, know about
this,
Eric?
That's not what they necessarily were described as or how he pictured them in his head, and then he saw the movie and was like, no, that's better.
Yeah, that's actually really cool.
That's so funny.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, like, so the Guild Navigators aren't even really in Dune, the first book. Like, you don't really see them. They're just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Lynch was like, I gotta have a fucked up little fetus-looking thing with a big brain.
It has, like, a little, like, vagina mouth where, like, smoke blows out of it, and it, like, farts stars to, like, help them space travel. That's my favorite part of Dune 84, is the space navigator scene. It's just buck wild, and I wish...
It's so weird.
I wish they involved... Because I would love to see Denis' take on what the Guild Navigators look like, because also I think it drives the importance of the spice and how they use it as their like basically their mental jet fuel to like send all of these, you know, houses to different planets,
right?
And
right.
Shows like how addicted you can get to it, like the fact that these were humans who are basically in chambers of it to the point where they just become like strange floating fish creatures. You know, I was just, like, I think if they make Messiah, I would really hope that they have that in there, because there's some...
Yeah, I hope he goes with, like, Lynchian, like, visuals with that, you know?
Yeah, because I think, like, the pacing of introducing characters was also really smart. Like, they could have introduced Irulan, the Emperor, Fade in part one, but then we're just being overwhelmed with so many characters that aren't super relevant to part one that I'm like, okay, maybe by Messiah, that's when we'll start slipping in Guild Navigators, but you know, we'll see.
Some freaky fucked up little fetus guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something that I think is obviously the Star Wars of it all.
Yeah.
Those movies were made one at a time, and perhaps aside from the prequels, but really each of those movies came out one at a time, and the ideas for the next one were developed after the one prior. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't have like a book. Lucas wrote like a something 900 page script after he read Dune and was like, I want to do Dune.
Yeah, I want to make Dune.
But like, there wasn't like source material in the way that these films were adapted from like a very well-revered book. And so the kind of like pacing, like you're saying, of like the release, the reveal of different characters was a creative choice in the adaptation, as opposed to just like, oh, it's a new movie, we may as well throw in a couple new guys.
No, totally. I think also it's interesting because like I saw some takes. I sent the one to you and Michael Delaney, Mike, of like a guy who I like on TikTok, and I was kind of surprised by him saying something like in this vein, but he was like, dang, after seeing Dune Part 2, it made me realize how much of Star Wars is just Dune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's true, but also, Michael Delaney had a good point, it's the monomyth.
Right.
In general, it's the hero's journey,
but also, it's Dune.
It is Dune, like, though, it is really
so,
Dune.
So I know that kind of like the big three or four for Lucas was like Flash Gordon and other like serials on Saturday morning or whatever, or like before a film. And then, like, Western slash martial arts, Kurosawa, and then Dune. Yeah. And, like, the thing that's so funny when we're talking about Star Wars is you could make an argument, and I know a couple guys who do every week, that everything is kind of just Star Wars. Like, you know, the contemporary understanding of, like, film, special effects, science fiction, just anything really, kind of hangs its hat on Star Wars. You know, like the special effects industry, you could argue, started with Star Wars. You know what I mean? And Star Wars is doing Dune. So, like, in a way, this Dune is doing some Star Wars things in the sense of, like, how they're modeling their props and their spaceships and their CGI. It's all kind of, like, on the shoulders of what Star Wars kind of got started. Yet Star Wars, it's like, the ultimate snake eating its own tail.
The ultimate Ouroboros, yeah. Yeah.
Like, is someone going to make a Star Wars thing that's directly inspired by Villeneuve's Dune?
I mean, yes. That is going to happen.
Yeah.
In like 30 years, maybe, but yes.
Right, right.
Yeah. So many, like, I don't know if y'all saw, what was that show? Ahsoka?
Ahsoka.
But, like, those little space witches that they had in there, I was like, bitch, those are the Bene Gesserit.
Yeah, totally.
Like, there was a scene in one of the shows where they were on Luke Skywalker planet, and they were like, we gotta get the spice. I think that might have been in the Boba Fett show.
Yeah.
And I was just like, damn, really? How Star Wars is it? How Dune is it?
Yeah,
that's I know, that's what question. I was gonna say.
In fact, so in the very first Star Wars, C-3PO, at some point when he's worried about something or other, he says, like, they'll send us to the spice mines of Kessel. Like, spice has been in the, like, vocabulary of Star Wars from day one. And those witches, the Night Sisters, even that was an adaptation from an earlier Star Wars entry of the animated shows. So, like, we talk about it on this show a lot, that Star Wars is now just, like, referencing itself. But, like, its best references seem to be coming from Dune.
Yeah. And you know that back in, like, 1977, right?
Yeah, that's when the first one came out.
I don't know why I, like, doubted myself for a second. But anyway, you know, in 1977, that was just a cute little reference, right?
Totally.
It's like the Spice Mines of Kessel.
Oh, and yeah.
Lucas is like, I'm going to put a little spice reference in there for the real nerds out there who've read Dune. And the ones who read Dune were probably like, oh, they said spice.
Yeah.
That's so cool. They're on a desert planet. They said spice.
Right.
You know, and now it is like, yeah, there is, it is funny. We've had this conversation a couple times in regards to anytime we cover something that like came out before Star Wars, like if it's media that, like the one I always comes to mind is like Jaws.
Yeah.
Right. Because Jaws came out a couple years before Star Wars.
Yeah, 75, I think.
And so it's like, it's interesting to like look at something that preceded Star Wars and say, well, how Star Wars is this? Because it's like, well, Star Wars came out of this. And Dune is the ultimate example.
Yeah, right.
Because it literally is the biggest inspiration for Star Wars.
Yeah.
And so it's funny to try to be like, well, how Star Wars is it? It's like, yeah, you're right, Eric. The question is, it's how Dune is it?
Yeah.
It's Hadi.
Hadi.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Hadi. Yeah. And also, that kind of sounds like Mahdi, which funny, is the like, name of the Messiah.
The sort of cosmetic aesthetic things to do with Star Wars are like zappy and colorful and lasery. And my understanding of Dune thus far is really mostly Arrakis based. There's other planets, but we don't see them very much. Mm-hmm. And the lasers are kind of few and far between. It looks a lot more like earthbound things, like fiery explosions and helicopters and knives.
Even though it's like knives. What is it, like 10,000 years in the future, it's all it's very low tech, because like they reference it a little bit in the book. I don't think they really bring it up in the films, but there's like a whole war against AI, that's the reason like computers are essentially banned. That's why they have like the Mentats, who are basically human computers. You have the Bene Gesserit, who are like trained to be, I don't know, whatever they're trained to be, just
they have weird jobs.
They have very weird jobs. I want that
seductress
job.
Mother.
Mm-hmm.
The mother, prophetess,
mothers out there mothering. Mm-hmm.
I like it goes into the world building in the book, right? Because there is this low tech, like you can't have computers, so everything has to be done like analog, right? And they don't really get into it in the movie, you're right, but it creates a really cool feel for the world that like feels kind of Star Wars, like Star Wars-y has that similar feeling where it's like it is more like lasers and stuff, but when you're on Tatooine,
right,
when you're like in the first movie, for half of the movie, it feels very Dune-y because you're like, oh, everything's kind of grungy.
Right.
Like, where's the all the, like, this doesn't look like my typical science fiction. Like, yeah, where's the sleek spaceships and the pew-pew lasers and stuff? It's all grungy and, like, weird. Like, where is it? And I think Dune does that really well. It, like, shows you a very lived-in, well-imagined world.
And, you know, the whole thing about the no thinking machines or whatever is such a smart writing device for someone writing a science fiction book in 1965.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, all I know is that computers are going to keep getting better, but I want this book to be forever. Mm-hmm. And, we'll just say there's no computers.
It's impossible to date it, right?
Because
not like, you know, like other science fiction will be like, and then the cassettes that they were using. And it's like,
which you see in Star Wars sometimes. You see like rotary like tape reels.
It's like, why would they be using this in the future? Which like, so like Dune is like, that's such a good point, Mike. That is part of the reason why it feels like a classic.
Yeah.
Because it's timeless.
It's like one of my favorite lines in any movie is in Looper, Rian Johnson's Looper, when Joseph Gordon-Levitt is talking to his older self, Bruce Willis, and he's asking about, like, but if I did such and such, wouldn't that create a paradox, like a time paradox, and blah, blah, blah. And Bruce Willis was like, it's time travel, it's messy. And then they just sort of, like, dismiss you having to think about, like, the science for the rest of the movie.
Right. Yeah. Stop worrying about it. Quit being a nerd.
It's like the movie's telling you, like, guys, it's a movie.
It's just a movie.
Yeah.
We're just watching a movie here.
That's kind of how they, like, brought up the Fremen tech. Like, whenever somebody died, they, like, sucking the water out of them, getting all that juice.
Yeah.
That nasty juice.
The wind catchers, they're like, it catches the moisture from the wind and makes it into water. You're just kind of like, okay, cool, that works for me.
Cool.
That's fine.
Sounds good.
Like they could have easily just skipped
you
over.
You don't know. You don't live here. We live here.
which is our stuff.
Which Zendaya, like, she flat out told that to Paul at one point when he was like, oh, well, like, all of my tapes of sand walking said it was like this. And she's just like, bitch, please.
Yeah.
That part got a laugh in the theater too, because he's like, starts to mansplain sand walking, and she's kind of like, what?
Oh, well, I better watch one of those tapes.
He just goes, oh, never mind. Like, it's really like embarrassed.
Yeah.
And that got a laugh in the theater I was in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, we didn't even talk about this yet, but there's like a kind of really beautiful love story in this. Mm-hmm. Like the Chani Paul love story that we get to watch develop over the course of part two is kind of sweet and like really beautiful, and then has a very tragic like ending, at least in this movie.
Yeah, right.
Which is like, I am wondering if we're going to get that Messiah movie, because it will be interesting to see how they do her character in that one. Because Mike, I don't know if I told you this, but like in those books, she kind of becomes his, like, what's like the word for it when you're like
concubine.
His concubine. Yeah. Yes. She's like everyone. She's an open secret. Everyone knows that he actually loves Chani, and she is his like actual true love. Right. But he's with the Princess Irulan, like in public for, you know, all the
political reasons,
political and royalty reasons.
Yeah.
But that, like, that almost feels like it wouldn't work with the characterization that they have set up so far.
Yeah.
And so I'm interested to see what they do.
Yeah. It was, that was one change that I was like, I love that they gave Chani that kind of like fight against him rising to power, but it's like, it kind of parallels what Lady Jessica was to Duke Leto. Like, Duke Leto never married her for political reasons. And he wished she had. But yeah, the whole like Chani versus Irulan story in Messiah is going to be interesting to see how they kind of maybe bring her back to Paul, or maybe don't. But I love I love the love story, the music that they have. I like listen to that song sometimes when I'm driving to work. I'm just like, it gives me love in the desert.
Yes. It's like, I don't know if we have I'm trying to think in Star Wars if they ever get a good enough love story that would like parallel it. Because you've got you've got Han and Leia, which is like a fun love story, but I don't know if it's as sweet or like if you get the real, like, I don't know if they put in the work.
Well, I mean, what about Amidala and Anakin?
Over the course of the prequels?
The difference there is that is such a like, they fall in love. Like you can like feel the movie like telling you to believe that they're in love, as opposed to like seeing it in their character or in how they behave.
Or in how they look at each other.
Yeah, right.
A lot of like acting with the eyes in this movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there was some moments are just like literally all it is facial expressions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like no dialogue, just like Zendaya with her eyes being like, I'm upset.
Mm-hmm.
Really they do cool have stuff. Great love music, though, in Star Wars.
Yes.
The Han and Leia theme and the Anakin and Padme theme are both really good.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Eric?
I can't remember anymore.
That's okay.
Josiah, when you started that sentence, you said, like, something we haven't talked about yet is a really beautiful, and then my brain on autocomplete thought you were going to say worm. Because we also haven't really talked about the worms.
We haven't talked about Shai Hulud.
I'm so here for the sand riding scenes, or the sand worm riding scenes.
Uh-huh.
That first scene with Paul, like learning how to get his footing on it. Hands were sweating, just like when we were holding hands, Josiah. Like,
just like that.
I was nervous for him, and I'm like, I know this bitch is gonna get it, but like, I still can't help but feel like, you know, I'm getting sandblasted in my Shai Hulusi.
Yeah, my palms are sweaty. There was vomit on my sweater already.
Yeah,
it was real mom spaghetti situation.
Yes.
And when you look into the Shai Hulud, that's a real mom spaghetti situation for sure. Like that mouth is nasty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they got a lot going on.
Lots of tendrils.
Mm-hmm.
I love that did you guys see that tweet that was like Neil deGrasse Tyson was like, worms don't work like that.
Can we just
everyone was like, shut up.
Have someone like take his phone away.
I think they explain it in the book why they just like move so fast. It has something to do with like kinetic energy or something.
Sure.
like mini explosions. Like there's supposed to be like lightning shooting out of these sandworms in the book.
Yeah.
That's wild.
I'm like, Neil, you know this is fake, right?
That's like how George Lucas explained to the CGI artists how Watto flies.
Yeah.
The character for the prequels, you know, Watto, the guy who like owns Anakin, he's like, oh, Anakin.
Oh, yeah.
He's like a little blue guy with a nose.
Mm-hmm.
Some artist made like a 3D mock-up of what he would look like, and George Lucas approved it, and then the CGI people were like, He flies with those little wings, but that big belly? How are we supposed to make that realistic? And George Lucas was like, oh, just imagine his belly's full of helium.
Yeah. There you go.
He was basically like, guys, it's not real. You can do whatever you want. Okay? We can just make it up.
Yeah.
And that's I'll pretend. I wish I could go to Neil deGrasse Tyson and be like, Neil, it's made up.
Yeah. Just fake. Imagine the worms are full of helium.
Just imagine the worms are full of helium and they're like, woo! We're so fast.
I'm surprised they didn't talk more about how the spice comes from the worms.
Like, yes.
I was like waiting for that to be a plot point where they're like, oh, the sands or the worms make the spice. And that's why they like worship them as gods, because they're like giving them a product that extends their life and consciousness. That and the water allergy, which they kind of shifted into just the very end being like, oh, we got atomics and we're not actually just going to poison all of these sandworms with like water because, hey, they're allergic to that. But
we did see that poor little sandworm die in the water. That poor little guy. He was so cute.
And then she sucked the Kool-Aid right out of him.
She was like...
So you're saying the worms make the spice. Is the Kool-Aid, like, dispersed into the sand and it becomes spice?
I don't that know. Way? If it
this may is a good be, question,
it,
Mike.
it may be worm poop. Okay. It may be, like, decomposed worm that turns into spice. I'm not sure, but, like, the water of life is, like, their blood like secretions their blood. Where it's just like it's so pure. Concentrated with spice
straight from the source.
So the spice is maybe like if to use the blood as an analogy, it could be like their skin flakes or their dandruff. Sure.
Literally their dandruff. Yeah.
Guys, do you ever think that like if I like we're all men here. Mm-hmm. You know? Do you ever look at that? Do you ever sit there watching dude too, and you see Paul drinking that water of life, and you're like, I could fucking do that too.
I just want to know, tastes like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, is this Gatorade, Arctic Cooler? Is it Baja Blast?
What are we talking? What's the flavor? Mm-hmm.
The Windex, maybe?
I'm pretty sure I could survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give me that water of life. I want to see all the time and space at once.
I don't want to take it. I don't want to know my relatives like that. Like you're just taking on too much past knowledge. I don't need to deal with that.
That's true. I don't actually want to know all my ancestors' knowledge. That would be too much. I do want to see my whole existence all at once, like in the fifth dimension where I can just go through it like a comic book.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
That would be fun.
And you could always spray your windshields.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the water of life.
Yeah.
And just get a little taste.
If you read the book, those passages when they're going through the spice trance, phenomenal writing. It's like 10 pages of psychedelic, like, war precognition. It's really stunning.
Cool.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, because, like, there is some, like, different concepts the book, and it, like, hints at, and the movie kind of hints at, and one of them is that, like, Paul is essentially, after drinking the water of life, like, experiencing all of his life at once.
Mm-hmm.
Like past, future, present, all at the same time, which is why like certain things, like when he says, "I heard your footsteps, old man." Like that one is like a throwback from he's like doing a callback, but it's also like he could be experiencing all these things at the same time, which is cool. It's kind of like Dr. Manhattan to go back to the Watchmen reference, living, experiencing all of everything at the same time.
Star Wars, where Luke sees Han and Leia get captured, and he leaves Dagobah.
There you go. We've talked a little bit about Star Wars and about how Dune is, how Star Wars is Dune. Do we want to run to the break? I'm not sure how long we've been recording. I think it's been about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Should we run to the break and then come back and play a game?
Yes.
Yeah, let's do a little
game.
Let's
do it.
Woo.
Woohoo.
Whoa.
What's up, everybody? My name is Chance Nichols, and I am the host of We Didn't Peak. It's a podcast where I interview people who don't suck. I mean, they're people who are chasing their dreams, and we talk about their lives, where they've been, where they're going. And look, you don't have to be chasing your dreams to not suck. I know plenty of cool people who hate their lives, all right? Boy, this is less an advertisement, more an insult. Okay, well, listen to us wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Instagram at We Didn't Peak.
And we're Arrakis. That was the best one we could think of.
Welcome, Arrakis, to the show.
Welcome, Arrakis.
All right. We have a game, a head-to-head competition between Eric and Josiah.
Yes.
And it is an old standby when we do a movie and I didn't think of something better. It is the IMDb game.
Yay! Ooh.
So the way that this game works is you guys will alternate. I'll give you... Oh, my thing is telling me my internet connection is unstable. Are you hearing me?
You're a little spotty, but I'm hearing you now.
Yeah.
Okay. So you will go back and forth. We'll do an alternating way of doing it. I'll give you an actor from Dune Part 2, and you have to guess as many of their IMDb most known for top four projects as you can. Now, IMDb doesn't seem to have a terribly obvious way of how they calculate those, but it can be movies or it can be TV. It's not going to be TV for this cast.
No way, dude.
But what I'm going to do is if you're the person who's the in control of the board, it's your question. You get one free miss, and each one you get is worth 1 point. So you get one mulligan, and then the opponent will get a chance to steal until they miss once. They don't get a free miss.
Perfect.
So,
and don't pull up IMDb, Eric. Don't cheat.
Yeah.
I have good movie knowledge for most of the cast. The other half of them, I couldn't tell you. So we'll see how it goes.
This game is fun because like sometimes it seems so obvious, and you're like, of course. And then other times you're like, why can't I think of a movie that Tom Hanks has been in? You know, it's like very, it can go both ways.
Who would like to start?
Eric should start because he's the guest.
I'll do it. Yeah, let's go first.
All right. I am pulling up the first build, and that happens to be in this film, Timothée Chalamet.
Oh, Timothée Chalamet. So obviously Dune Part 1.
We'll do one at a time because wouldn't you know it, Dune Part 1 is not in the top four most known for.
Well, throw me into the sand to the worms.
But that's just, you get one free miss. Keep guessing.
Oh, shit. Oh, I get to do more. Okay. Wonka?
Wonka is on there.
Wow. Cool. Nice pull. Nice pull.
Call Me by Your Name.
That is also on there.
I forgot he was in that.
Lady Bird.
That is also on there.
Little Women.
No, Little Women didn't make the cut. So Josiah, you get a chance to steal until you crap out.
Those were all the ones I was going to say. There was one bad one I know that he was in that movie that sucked. Don't Look Up.
Oh, was he in that?
I think he was. That movie was
that
bad.
Is not on his most known for. The fourth one on this list is called Beautiful Boy. I think maybe he was Steve Carell's son. Yeah, Steve Carell's in that.
Hmm, interesting. I don't know if I know that one.
A little drama, I think.
A little drama never hurt anyone.
But it's entirely insane that he is... The movie, the franchise of Dune is hung on his shoulders, and he is not... Neither is in his top four.
That's so strange.
All right, control now switches over to Josiah. Your actor is Zendaya.
Okay, first guess. The video Zendaya is Michi.
No.
That's not in there? Strange. Just kidding. That's not my first guess. I'm going to say Spider-Man Homecoming?
That is on there.
Great. That's a big one. Is there? Can I have a hint? Is there any other Spider-Man on
you
there?
You cannot have a hint.
Dang it! I'll say Spider-Man No Way Home?
No.
Aye.
But that's your one free miss. I'm not counting Zendaya as Michi.
Well, that is the funniest video on YouTube. the best song ever written. Zendaya. She's so prolific. She's in everything lately. Oh, I'm going to say Dune Part 1.
No. So you get a chance to steal, Eric, and you can guess. If you get the first one right, you can keep guessing.
I'm going to go with Euphoria.
It is also not on there.
That's fucked
up. That's strange.
That's weird. She has two Emmys for that.
I know. And awards tend to, it would seem, contribute to this known for thing. Mm-hmm. But
that's crazy.
Josiah, you were very close. One of the other top four was Far From Home, Spider-Man Far From Home. Also included is a movie called Malcolm and Marie, which I have not heard of.
Never heard of her.
And The Greatest Showman.
That was gonna be my next guess. Was Greatest Showman.
All right.
I forgot about Greatest Showman.
Return to Eric in control.
Yeah.
The next actor is Rebecca Ferguson.
Ooh, Rebecca Ferguson. I'm gonna go Dr. Sleep.
Not on there.
Rude.
But you get one. That's your free one.
Okay. This is really bad. I don't. Listen, I'm gay. I don't know which Mission Impossible it was, but she was in one of them. She was in three of them. I know that.
Yeah.
But I couldn't be bothered to watch a fucking Mission Impossible. I'm sorry.
You don't like 2.5 hours of high octane action?
No. Like, honestly, Tom Cruise, just jump out of that airplane. Do what you need to do. I don't care.
Yes. Live your life. Come on, Tom.
Well, you're on to something if you want to guess at one of those
Mission
titles.
Impossible 3.
No. Oh, you're so close.
Fuck.
You're so close.
Josiah, you get steal opportunity.
Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, right?
No.
Is that the first one? No, it's not. Damn it. It's 5, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Rogue Nation.
It's 5. Rogue Nation
and
is what the
one. And then Mission Impossible Fallout.
Right.
Also, The Greatest Showman.
She's in Greatest Showman?
Yep.
Would seem.
I didn't know that.
And
good for her.
I'm terribly sorry to say her fourth one is a movie called Dune.
Ah!
But we
are
still at the score where we were prior. It's 3-1 with Josiah now taking control of the board with Javier Bardem.
Oh, no. Okay. I don't know what he's been in. What is that one movie? I'm going to say Dune Part 2.
No.
Dang it. Okay.
But that's your freebie.
It's my freebie. There's like one that's like on the tip of my tongue. And
get
I
it
can't
off of
quite.
There.
Hold on. Oh, look at this. It's a little note. I can't. What the fuck movie am I thinking of? It's like he's like scary looking in it.
I know what movie you're talking about.
You know what movie I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Do you want to go ahead and steal from me?
No, you
hold on. Wait,
go
let me see.
It.
Is it like what is it? Is it like No Country for Old Men or something?
Is that your guess?
That yes.
Yeah,
sure.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. Huh.
That's what I was thinking,
that was so
too.
Hard.
You got any more guesses in there on the tip of your tongue?
No, that was the only one I could think of.
Do you have any guesses, Eric?
I think maybe the Little Mermaid remake they just did.
That's one of his like top pictures, but it's not one of his top movies. I was, if you look at photos, that's like the third one. But no,
that's crazy.
No, they were, there's a movie called The Sea Inside. Sea as in
Oh, I've heard of it. Yeah.
Another one called Beautiful, spelled B-I-U-T-I-F-U-L, like beautiful. Like, I imagine it's in Spanish or some kind of like Spanglish.
That's not
title.
How you spell that in Spanish.
And then the last one was Skyfall.
Oh, yes.
Again.
I knew he was, there was a Bond that was somewhere rolling around in there too. I was like, because I knew he was like the bad guy in a Bond. I couldn't quite place which one.
We've reached the last pair. Back to Eric in control. The next actor on the list is Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin, yeah.
Brolin out.
I'm going to go Avengers Endgame.
That is on there.
Hell yeah. Avengers Infinity War.
That is also on there.
A Dune Part 1.
No.
Fuck
what?
Me.
Like, I don't understand the Dune hate on IMDb.
Yeah, weird.
But yeah, that was your freebie. You get one more.
Okay, Josh Brolin. Honestly, the only thing I know him from is from Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is the same with me. Mm-hmm. Josiah Steele?
Jonah Hex.
No.
I think
but,
he was in that.
But that's not in anybody's top four.
Megan Fox.
The other ones, you know what's funny? Another one on his list is No Country for Old Men.
Oh, sure.
And then the last one is Inherent Vice.
I don't know what that is.
Okay, and Josiah, last one here for you to begin is Austin Butler.
Okay. I mean, we gotta go with Elvis.
We gotta go with Elvis, and we're that is go on there.
Elvis. Elvis, Doom Part 2?
Nope.
What?
But that's your Freeb.
Oh my god. Charlie told me what show he was from the other day, and I can't remember what it is. Is there any TV shows on there?
There is.
It was like, hey Charlie, what show is Elvis in?
What?
That's a pumpkin eater over there.
The Carrie Diaries.
The Carrie Diaries.
Which was what?
Here's what I'm gonna do.
The of Carrie Bradshaw of Sex and the City as a teenage girl.
Oh, no.
In the '80s.
That sounds bad.
Here's what I'm gonna do.
The love interest, okay. And me and Johnny had a huge crush on him.
Good. Thank you for your contribution.
You're welcome.
So you don't. You still have control of the board because that's correct, but Charlie gets that point.
Yeah, Charlie gets a point.
Oh, Charlie, you got a point.
You got a point.
Oh, cool, man. You got cool, man. Any other guesses in the tank on Austin Butler?
What'd you say?
Also, it wasn't a good show.
Yeah, she said it wasn't a good show. Bad show. I don't know, because all I knew was the Carrie Diaries, and I didn't know that. Charlie knew it. So,
okay, Eric, do you have any steals?
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Yes, that is in his top four.
That was like that Brad Pitt movie, yeah. I think that's all I got for Austin Butler.
Yeah, the last one is I have not heard of. It's called The Dead Don't Die.
Well, that doesn't seem correct.
This was a goddamn runaway. Mm-hmm. The final score was 6-3-1 in favor of Eric as our winner.
Hey. Yeah, Eric won. Really convincingly won.
Awesome.
Although I am proud of Charlie for getting on the board.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, come through, Charlie.
That was impressive, because she wasn't even supposed to play. That was impressive that she got a point.
Yeah.
I'm going to start cheating at that game all the time. I'm just going to ask Charlie what the answers are.
Oh, I thought what you were going to say was, if it's the night before we record and I'm asking about making a game, you're just going to study IMDb.
Yeah, religiously.
That's the best part about that game. The internet has already written it for me.
It's true. No prep work required.
Yeah.
I could have written an RPG to have you guys play.
That's true.
But I feel like a Dune RPG would be maybe too big for me to handle.
Yeah.
In like 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah. Trying to condense the plot of Dune Part 2 into 15 minutes would be difficult. But let's do it right now. Roll for your stats. How spicy are you?
Oh my gosh. Dungeons and Dragons, you could use that command spell. That's basically the voice.
That's basically the voice.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the like meme format that's just like Bene Gesserit voice and then it's someone saying something stupid? Mm-hmm. Like,
yes,
no worries,
I love it.
If not.
I love
I like the one.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Eric. No, you go.
Okay, fine. There was this one. It's this girl being like, if I was a Bene Gesserit, you better watch out. I'd be like, put on Chromatica album by Lady Gaga. Play Renaissance. Slay.
The one
honey.
I liked. The one that I liked that I saw was showing that like how Fade kind of gets like turned on a little bit when Paul uses the voice.
Uh-huh.
And that like last scene, I can't remember what Paul says. But he's like blah, and then it cuts to Fade, and he goes like there's a little bit of like a.
Yeah.
Oh, like his eyes get a little wide and he's like, whoa. Mm-hmm. I didn't know boys could do that.
I've also
Fade
seen
a horny little guy.
A format of just like it's of Lady Jessica saying use the voice. It's in fact, I think it's from the first movie. And then like the second panel is just, you know, like Borat or, you know, someone with a voice.
Yeah.
My wife.
The memes floweth just like the spice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny you said that trying to condense it to 15 minutes would be hard. That is decidedly true. But I do think that the over 5 hours of movie that these two together could have been, and in fact it has been proven that it could have been less than that, to its detriment.
Right.
Is my understanding of the 1984 version that like it really could have used more time, both runtime and development/production time.
Yes, definitely.
But that said, we've already said it, I would have spent 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally.
Hanging out.
Just hanging out on a racket.
Drinking blue Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
And Denis, like, opposed to doing director's cuts of the film, which makes me sad because I would love a director's cut. But
well, I know I did see that he was like, if it's deleted scene, it's gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like an interesting take, because I know that's the thing is like we have things like the extended edition of Lord of the Rings, which are like widely beloved. But then we have things like the extended cut of Justice League, which we had to watch.
I thought you were going to say Batman versus... you do.
Yes, that one also isn't that thing you do extended cut is not that valuable of an extended cut. But I mean Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice.
Yeah.
Right? That's the extended cut we saw. Worthless.
Right.
Stupid. Mm-hmm.
Right.
No need for that extra amount of that movie.
Yeah. But I think it is interesting for like a filmmaker to have a opinion period in a lot of in a lot of what's going on nowadays, but like one that is sort of like, I know what you guys want is more of this, and I'm unwilling to give you that.
Yes,
like, that is kind of interesting, if not sort of disappointing.
Yeah, he's like, it shows a level of restraint that is not often seen in Hollywood,
right?
Where it's like, you want more, or maybe it's his kink. Maybe he's like, no. He's teasing us.
And it's decidedly not the George Lucas approach.
No, George is like, let me give you as much as and more and more and more.
Yeah.
Stuff you weren't even asking for.
Right.
But we are asking for it. For Denis, please, you don't me.
There's so much content in the Duneverse. I think they could fully make a Star Wars level universe if they wanted to.
Totally.
It's very bizarre. It's very esoteric. I think we have one of the books is like loosely being adapted for HBO Max, a series called Dune Prophecy, and it's all about the Harkonnens forming the Bene Gesserit Order, and I'm so pumped for that. I have no idea what to expect, because Denis was attached to it as a producer and dropped out and like kind of in COVID time, so that makes me worried, but
that's interesting.
It's never a good omen when the head creative drops out of a project.
Yeah, like the Avatar: The Last Airbender story.
Yeah.
Did it somewhere in the bajillion books, is there more on the story of like whatever year it would have been that the humans decided to stop having computers?
I think so. I don't know.
Yeah, probably. I don't know.
There's a lot of books. I've only read three.
Okay.
I'm probably gonna read God Emperor next, the fourth one, but there's a whole lot of content out there, and some of them are like prequels to like before Leto, Jessica were even like a thing. So I'm sure they speak to it more somewhere.
It's funny because one time shortly after college, after I read Dune, I like went to like, you know, Barnes & Noble or whatever, and I don't know why I did this, but I just picked up what I assumed was the next Dune book, and I don't know why I didn't look it up to be like, is this the next Dune book? Because it wasn't. It was one written by his son that took place many, many years later and followed, what's her name? The daughter of Jessica.
The daughter?
Paul's sister. Aaliyah?
Aaliyah.
Followed her, and Paul was nowhere to be seen. And I was like, this is a weird sequel. I was like, they just like jumped over a lot of things. And then I like looked it up, and it was like, oh, this is actually by his son, and there's all these other books that came before. And then I was like, why did I do that? Why did I just pick up the only other book at Barnes & Noble and be like, this must be the sequel?
Yeah. You did that with Star Wars, though, too. Didn't you just like kind of read Star Wars books in whatever order you came to them?
Just like whenever they're at the library, I just check them out and be like, time to read this one. I did that with like Redwall books too, like any order, just like whatever book they came in. I was like, yep, just gonna read these. I don't care if there's an order, but that was the way we did things in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Sure. We didn't have the information.
We didn't have the information superhighway.
No.
What were we supposed to do? There was, what was I the other day? Oh, never mind. That's too long a story. Star Wars is Dune.
Mm-hmm.
Dune is Star Wars. How Star Wars is Dune Part 2 is the question.
That is the question.
We've got a lot of pros in the pros column.
I was looking here too. You know, you made the point about like the source material came before Star Wars, and Star Wars was directly inspired by it. The order of release of the books, Dune, Dune Messiah, and Children of Dune all came out before 1977. Now, they were in production for Star Wars by 76 or 75 even, so like Children of Dune may not have directly had an influence on Lucas, but at that point the damage had been done.
Right. Totally.
So in that kind of like loopy way, the sort of teasing of the next movie, if it were to happen, even that movie came out before Star Wars, or rather that book did.
Right. Yeah, so it's all on Ouroboros. Mm-hmm. However you say that word, I still don't know. And it's got desert planets. It's got little sword fights.
Mm-hmm.
It's got
witch ladies.
Witch ladies. Has like space powers, like crazy space mm-hmm. powers, seeing the future.
Definitely some spaceships.
Mm-hmm. Spaceships?
Yeah.
And really, an emperor?
Big worm?
Big worm. There is
There's
a big
worm
in Star
on the
Wars.
Asteroid and mm-hmm. Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
There was a scene where they're in space and there are stars, and stars are also in Star Wars.
And hey, while we're at it, a war gets started. And there's wars in Star mm-hmm. Wars. So we have the two basic parts of Star Wars. Uh-huh.
Paul basically is Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah.
Walking around with a hood on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And burdened with a glorious purpose and a prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good point. I think that's the easiest way to flip the switch for if someone is saying, like, it's just like Star Wars. He's like Luke. The easiest way to be like, you misunderstand the text, he's actually Anakin. Like, that's it.
That's a pretty good, like, you know, description, and would probably do it for a lot of people, because they're like, oh, I know Star Wars. Yeah. Anakin. It's Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point, Eric.
I think sonically, like, music-wise, you know, Star Wars has some very, like, iconic music, and, like, with Dune, like, like anytime we hear vocal chanting, it's gonna be like, oh, that's Dune. That's Dune. Uh-huh. That's the Paul Atreides theme.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
It is like instantly identifiable in a fun way.
Mm-hmm. So does Dune, you said the thing about there is star and there is wars. Does Dune do both of those words better? Star kind of says planet and science fiction and like space travel, and Dune is like, here's how space travel works, whereas Star Wars is like, that's magic. And like the wars of it all, it like tells you politically what's going on, and wars are inherently a political thing. It's not mm-hmm. just like there's bad guys out there, like mm-hmm. I think maybe Dune, you could make an argument, is more Star Wars than a good portion of Star Wars.
I think you're right.
Or rather, that it does the promise of the premise of the title that is Star Wars.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's going to get a higher score because it is almost more Star Wars than Star Wars is. Like, it's like the water of life. Mm-hmm. It's distilled. Mm-hmm. It's like coming straight from the tap.
Mm-hmm. I think where it might fail at being Star Wars is I don't think Dune is as accessible for children.
Sure.
And while I have seen Dune toys, like, they're not at Target, but they have, like, some action figures. And, like, I think a Lego Thropter, which I would love to purchase.
They have a Lego Thropter?
I want that. I feel like I saw it and I was like, that's $80. I don't want to spend that much money on Legos. But
I'll save it for my next birthday.
I think they're missing some of that. I think maybe the variety of creatures and aliens they're lacking. Mm-hmm. But
these are all good points.
Yeah. And I think
it's not like fun in the way that Star mm-hmm. Wars is. Not to say that I like it a lot, but it's not like silly and mm-hmm. like you were saying, like accessible to kids or like a fairy tale. It's not really a fairy tale.
Yeah. Totally.
It's great for people who grew up on Star Wars.
Yeah.
Or, you know, are currently growing up on Star Wars to see, like, a different sort of space opera, Game of Thrones type of vibe.
Yes, mm-hmm. totally.
That's so true. It's like taking Star Wars. It's like, oh, you like Star Wars? Well, but you're an adult now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you might enjoy Dune because mm-hmm. because it's basically the same stuff, but it's like a little more mature.
Mm-hmm.
There's no Jar Jar Binks in there that's going to annoy you.
Right.
It's just going to be like a mature, like, you know, complicated, not complicated, yeah, but like, you know, has like, you know, inner like political workings and all sorts, yeah, of, you know, machinations and stuff. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, it's more mature in a way.
Chani's best friend is Jar Jar Binks, as far as I'm concerned. I was like, I don't know why they're focusing on her instead of like putting in Thulfer Hawaii or, yeah, like focusing more on some characters like Gurney Halleck. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I loved her. Like, yeah, her just like best friend that's like, I'm going to make fun of Paul some more. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay. Yeah, geez,
it's almost right, like they deferred like, or they made Chani as a character be so integral to understanding Paul that then they're like, oh well, shit, we didn't give her a character, so let's give her a friend to like make her seem like
yeah, and then we'll give that friend a friend. I don't know, do we think that we're getting kind of close to the end of our allotted time here? Do we think that we can give it a rating, or is there any other
do
points?
You remember what we gave part one?
I can try and find it real fast.
I definitely listened to it. It was up there. I feel like it was maybe around like a 7 to 8 rating.
That would make sense. I believe that.
That would make sense. Should I try and find it real fast?
Yeah.
Hold on one second.
Because then we can do what we've been doing with the Fast and Furious movies and like kind of rate it against itself. Yeah,
hey, it's my voice.
This is Duneception right now.
Hold on. I gave it a 6, Mike gave it a 7, and it got a 6.5.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, is this higher? I think it might be higher than the first one.
I think with all of the laser battles and, yeah, like, the what is it, the Harkonnen's little anti-gravity suits, like, through the desert, mm-hmm, definitely a lot more fun battle scenes, which,
yeah,
felt
it's more
Star
action-y.
Wars.
More action, yeah, for sure. Yeah, the first movie, the Doom Part 1 is all set up,
yeah,
right? It's,
yeah,
all world building and set up. And then Doom Part 2 is watching the dominoes fall.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that you get more of the action set pieces, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is a little higher for me.
Yeah.
So I think I'm ready to give it a rating.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Eric, we pick a unit of measure, which can be anything Dune-related, or it can be Star Wars-related, but normally it's like related to the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll give it a rating from 1 to 10. So I think my unit of measure is going to be, it's got to be little, I can't,
it's little gotta worms. Be?
It's got to be little, it's got to be little worms.
Okay.
Baby ones, the baby sandworms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mine will be, now I'm going to need help on the plural, but either Muad'Dib or Muad'Dibs, the actual animal.
I think Muad'Dib.
Yes, the little mouse. Yeah.
You know what they have in Chicago is something called Muad'Dibs, which is whenever you're trying to keep your parking
Wait,
spot.
Is that what the rat hole was?
Yeah.
Someone was trying to hold their parking spot.
Yeah, it was a Muad'Dibs. Yeah, I think you're right. Muad'Dibs.
Okay.
The kangaroo mouse.
Ooh. Now I have to think what my rating is. You just pick a thing. It's like, instead of saying like stars.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to go with little spice candies.
Mm-hmm. When they're like, it's too spicy for this
exactly.
white boy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, he's
like
white. He's a
like
fucking
the spice
loser.
Level, you know, when you get like Thai food or something.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. That's my.
I just got ramen the other night that was level 1 spice. And mm-hmm. I was like, this wasn't too spicy at all.
That is actually really funny that it's a story about a white boy. That it's stuff is too spicy for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think I'm gonna give it a solid 7 little worms.
I'm feeling like the same thing. Like it's a 7.
Mm-hmm.
Although you're saying I gave the last one 7, I don't feel that this has necessarily deviated terribly much one way or the other from the first one. Maybe, you know what, since you're saying 7 and I said 7 last time, maybe I'll say 7.5.
Sure. Because
it is more action-y.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna go.
Eric, what are you feeling?
On the spice chart, it's giving like 7.5. I'm gonna go yeah. with that as well.
Totally. All right, so he's got 7 and 2 7.5s. It's decidedly more Star Wars than part one.
You know what I'm going to do? Because the image of a half little mouse really fucking sucks. I'm going to say 8.
Okay, good, good, good. So we got a solid 7.5.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Okay. Well, that we did it, folks. We rated Dune Part 2. Do you want us on the internet? Because if you do, you can find us at How Star Wars Is It on Twitter and Instagram. You can email us at agoodpodcast@gmail.com because that's what this is. I think we got... Let me check if we have a email recently. our new best friend, Justin, who is a new listener, has emailed us twice about our last prompts that we gave, which is he's my new favorite guy. Well, let me find.
This is always fun for me because I never remember what the prompts are.
So he always said we can say his name. So Justin has emailed us about the episode in regards to nothing, which he did a good job because he gave it no subject line, and most of the body of the it is empty, which is what we I think suggested. And then he also gave us some interesting notes, which he also said he enjoys our spontaneous discussion of random physics topics, which is good because we do that. And he said, P.S. I have heard of Hank the Cowdog, but I didn't know anything about it, so we helped him there. And then he also he said, I do in fact, I don't think this is a prompt, but we said, he said, I do in fact listen to this podcast while on my bike in a safe way. I am not sending this email from my bike. So thank you, Justin, for continuing to correspond with us. You're our new favorite listener.
Yes. Always listen to podcasts safely. That's something. Yes. I mean, I've definitely been listening to a comedy podcast while doing pull-ups and then fallen because I was laughing. So,
yes. You got to be careful. You got to be careful. Mike, do you want to tell about the Patreon?
Yes, we also, if you want even more of this bullshit, we have a Patreon where weekly we do a bonus episode. If you like talking about physics, did we do any of that actually this week? I can't remember.
Kind of a little bit, yeah, a little bit.
But it's $5 a month gets you a weekly bonus episode. There's film commentaries, like full length, watch-alongs. There's improv, there's RPGs. I think there's even video. And that's all on there. The whole back catalog is available, and you get access to the Discord server. So that's patreon.com/howstarwarsisit. Josiah and I are also both part of Anarchy, the Improvised Rock Opera, which has shows going on right now at the I.O. Theater. And, Josiah, make a note to cut this if we haven't ironed everything out yet.
Okay.
And coming up soon here in Chicago... in honor of the May the 4th be with you weekend, in fact, Revenge of the 5th be with you, we are once again hosting trivia as part of the Counterfeit Combat Star Wars event. And check us out and follow Counterfeit Combat for details of when that's happening, other than the fact that it's on May the 5th.
Yep.
And check go ahead and cut all that because we haven't ironed out the details yet.
Great. Good. Eric, do you want people to follow you on social or anything that they should know about?
Yeah, I mean, you can follow me on Instagram at eParms, but honestly, it's just a lot of pictures of me, like, hiking, so, you know,
so
do what you
follow.
Will. I don't know.
there so do what content, you want with that knowledge.
You know, pretty trees, pretty trails.
Pretty man.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's here in Chicago. There, that's in California somewhere.
Yeah. I'll
so don't get
love
too excited
a pretty
if you're in
trail
Chicago.
In somewhere that has elevation changes.
So definitely not a whole lot of good hikes out in
old Chicago.
Illinois. Yeah.
Nope. Awesome. Well, Eric, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Pleasure to have a fellow Dune and Dunatic. I'm going to start calling us.
A Dunatic.
And that's all she wrote. So, Eric, at the end of the show, we say, we love you and may the 4th be with you. So if you want to say that with us at the end, you can.
Yeah.
But same as just a Star Wars, it's about time for Tubby Bye Bye. So like we always say...
We love you, and may the fourth be with you.
That was beautiful. Bye-bye.
And may thy knife chip and chatter.
And may thy knife
chip and chatter.